You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Smallpox has been one of history's deadliest diseases, but since 1976, it has also been the only major disease that's been eradicated across the globe. Dr. D.A. Henderson led the international effort to eliminate smallpox, for which he has been awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And he tells the story of this medical victory in Smallpox, The Death of a Disease, the inside story of eradicating a worldwide killer. It's published by Prometheus Books and brings Dr. D.A. Henderson, who is currently professor of medicine and public health at the University of Pittsburgh and distinguished scholar at the Center for Biosecurity in Baltimore. He's professor and former dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Welcome to our show.
Delighted to be here.
When we say smallpox is eradicated, what do we mean?
We mean that there is no human cases at all, and there have been no human cases for 30 years. So it's no longer circulating anywhere in the world.
But it's being kept alive in some laboratories?
It is present in two laboratories, one in Atlanta and the other in Novosibirsk in Siberia, but under a very tight circumstance of control to make sure it doesn't escape.
Now, why even save those samples?
Well, it's a matter of dispute on this because I think there are scientists who do say that we can't destroy this organism. My goodness, if we did, who knows what we might want to use it for 30 years from now. There are others who say, well, the best-run laboratories have escapes of viruses. And so why not destroy it? So I must say, I'm on the side of destroying it.
And later we'll get to a case where this was a major concern. But I want to know more about smallpox. What is it? It's not a virus. It's not a bacteria, is it?
Yeah, smallpox is a virus.
Oh, it is.
And it's been with us a very long time. We can trace it back to pharaohs. I think there are four pharaohs that died of smallpox, and we can tell that from the mummies. And it's gone on throughout history to be the most devastating disease known to man.
Does it mostly affect humans, or are other animals also susceptible?
Smallpox only can infect humans, so that in order to survive, it has to infect one human being after another. And it transmits from person to person, really by droplets as you're talking, what have you, there go into the air, small droplets, and the person right there inhales them.
And how would I know that I had smallpox?
Well, it usually begins with a very high fever and people feeling absolutely miserable. And then little pimples begin, and they begin to swell and pustules form. It's like having little boils all over the face and body. And you would know it with a rash. It's a very classical rash.
So the fever could be anything, but the minute we see that rash, we know what it is. And if someone comes down with it, how much of a chance of survival would he have?
Well, what we found is it's about 7 out of 10 survive. That is 30% of the people who get the disease die. And this has been true whether it's occurred, let's say, in a developing country or when it's been imported into a country with very good medical care.
So do we know why? Is it because some of us have weaker immune systems? Or are there certain strains that are stronger?
Yeah, most of the smallpox was a strong strain throughout Asia and into the Middle East. There was a little weaker strain in Africa and in South America in later years. But it wasn't the virus, it wasn't the individual, but it was more the virus was the real problem. And those who survived, some do better with the disease than others, and it's...
Well, Abraham Lincoln came down with it just about the time he was delivering the Gettysburg Address.
That was a surprising thing. Lincoln, in the time he was preparing the Gettysburg Address, had the fever of smallpox, delivered the speech in Gettysburg, and was brought back on a bed in the train, and then stayed isolated in the White House for a couple of weeks.
It killed his secretary, didn't it? How come he survived?
I think it's just individual variation in how well they can respond to an infection.
Before you were able to eradicate it, did you see any cases of smallpox personally?
I certainly did. I saw an awfully lot of them. They are really horrible to look at. And particularly, the patient is in pain. He can't eat, can't drink, because he's got pustules all over the inside of his mouth, sort of in agony, and there's nothing much you can do. There's no treatment at all. So it is really a painful thing to see.
So the only way you can really deal with smallpox is vaccination in advance of getting it. But once you get it, there's a 3 in 10 chance that you're going to die.
That's right. And even today, there is no drug that you can use that will be of any value.
In his foreword to your book, Richard Preston stresses that smallpox took several times more lives in the last 100 years than war did during that period. That we're talking about, let's say, World War I, which was devastating, World War II, all the other wars that we've seen?
We calculated for the 20th century about how many people died before eradication, and we estimate conservatively about 300 million. And that's about three times the number that the New York Times estimated to have died either directly or indirectly as a result of armed conflict.
Well, when I was a kid, I was vaccinated. Everybody was. You couldn't get into school if you weren't vaccinated. So why was it still so devastating?
Well, in this country, we were vaccinating, and every child had to be vaccinated before school entry. And why was that? We stopped having smallpox in 1949, and we're still doing this up till 23 years later. We were so afraid of smallpox coming into the country and spreading that not only the U.S., but countries around the world were vaccinating to protect themselves.
Was the vaccine only available in developed, prosperous countries?
No, it was available in many other countries. Many of them had vaccine, but it was a vaccine that wasn't very heat stable. And so it was carried in the tropics. It would be killed off by temperature.
My guest is D.A. Henderson, whose book Smallpox, A Death of a Disease, The Inside Story of Eradicating a Worldwide Killer, is published by Prometheus Books. The vaccine was developed a long time ago, wasn't it, Edward Jenner?
It certainly was, 1796. Our first vaccine. And it came about as a result of the observation that milkmaids did not seem to get smallpox.
Because they got a similar disease, cowpox?
There's a similar kind of a cousin of smallpox called cowpox. Then they would get a little few lesions on their hands, and it would prevent them from getting the disease. So he tested this and actually vaccinated a little boy. And then challenged him with smallpox about 6 weeks later, and he was protected.
Mm-hmm. So that would have been fine. Was this a good vaccine, or was it a bit crude?
Well, the vaccine was crude, but in the sense what the way they did, they had to take smallpox. Well, you had vaccinated somebody by putting the material into the arm. Then a pustule had come up. Then the way they kept it going was to take a little of that pustule and inoculated somebody else. So it was a continuing chain, had to keep going. And if at some point you failed, then you were out of luck and you'd have to go back and get something from the cow if you could find any cows that were infected at that time.
Often viruses adjust and they become immune to the vaccines. Did that happen with smallpox as well?
Yeah, I think what is remarkable is, so far as we can tell, that smallpox was very much the same for thousands of years. And the amount that it changed was almost none at all.
I was wondering about that pustule. You could be passing on another illness at the same time as you're passing on an immunity to smallpox, couldn't you? Somebody had syphilis, for example?
When they did the arm-to-arm vaccination, that's exactly what happened. And sometimes they found that the individual had a rash that looked like it, and it was syphilis. In fact, there was an event during the Civil War when the Southern troops, where they were vaccinating them arm to arm, and they did get them infected. And I think they had something like 5,000 troops out of commission at Chancellorsville because of syphilis.
When did we start vaccinating everyone in the United States with the kind of vaccine that I guess I got, which left a little telltale mark on my upper arm?
That's pretty much what we've done since Jenner's day back in 1796. And it was brought across. We used it as arm-to-arm vaccination. Finally, around the late 1800s, they began to produce it on cows. And really, more recently, they were able to freeze-dry it so that it would be very stable. And that's what we were getting most recently up through the 1970s.
And was a law passed that made it necessary for everybody to be vaccinated?
There was a law, yeah, I think every state, it was up to every state to do this, and each state did have laws that compelled the vaccination.
Now, I've been vaccinated, but that was a long time ago. If there were a smallpox outbreak, would I be immune still?
We think you would have some immunity, but after a long period of time, it fades. How much it fades, we're not quite sure, but I think it can be totally without, you may be totally without protection.
One of the stories we often hear about the Europeans coming to the Americas is that they actually gave blankets that were infected with smallpox to the Indians. Germ warfare, in effect.
This is true, and Lord Jeffrey Amherst is one of those who specifically was involved in advising that they take blankets from smallpox patients and giving it to the Indians.
Do the people at UMass know about that? Isn't isn't there a UMass Amherst? Let's talk about the start of your involvement in eradication efforts. Was it your goal from the start to bring about total eradication?
Yes, by peculiar circumstance. I was asked specifically in 1966 to assume direction of the global program. At that time, I think we believed in theory it was possible because the U.S. was free, Europe was free. If we can do it in some countries, we ought to be able to do it in others. But the question of how many obstacles there were to in the rest of the world, we had no idea at that time.
And there were obstacles, some of it just people being skeptical, some people not willing to give you support, including the head of the World Health Organization at the time.
That's correct. Director General at the time was Marcelino Candó, a Brazilian, very capable man. But he's absolutely persuaded that unless we vaccinated every last person, you couldn't eradicate the disease. And he knew Brazil, and he knew that there were Indian tribes up in the Amazon that don't emerge but every 20, 30 years. How can you possibly eradicate it?
Well, that was a good question. What was your answer?
Well, the answer is that smallpox has to keep moving, infecting people one after the other. And indeed, if it gets into, let's say, a remote group of people somewhere, they will either survive or they'll die. And once they survive, they're immune. So it would die out in remote villages and remote areas. It needed a population to keep going.
Well, what happened in Brazil? You describe the effort there as a regrettable saga.
Well, it was. Here is Brazil with a fairly sophisticated health service, and good transportation, communication compared to many countries. But it was just badly organized, and it was the whole government was just not working very well, and they insisted on vaccinating, and we said, no, we've got to find out how many cases we got and try and stop them. And it took a good bit of persuasion to get them there.
Part of the problem that the World Health Organization was decentralized?
The World Health Organization is decentralized. There are regional offices, and there are six of them. And each regional office is elected by the countries of that region. So the regional directors have some desire to continue their service, and there's a certain number of people appointed for a variety of reasons, not always for technical competence.
My guest is D.A. Henderson, who's written a book called Smallpox, The Death of a Disease, The Inside Story of Eradicating a Worldwide Killer. Dr. Henderson is currently professor of medicine and public health at the University of Pittsburgh and distinguished scholar at the Center for Biosecurity in Baltimore. The book is published by Prometheus. We will continue our conversation after this. We are back with Dr. D.A. Henderson. His book, Smallpox, The Death of a Disease, The Inside Story of Eradicating a Worldwide Killer, is published by Prometheus Books. It's the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation grant recipient this year. A listener wonders about cowpox. Is it still around? And is it still dangerous?
Well, cowpox is still around. We now believe that cowpox actually keeps circulating among small rodents and only occasionally is manifested as some cowpox or pox in cows. No, it's not particularly dangerous. We do have cases occasionally, and these are just little like vaccination pustules, and they go away after a little time.
There was some irony in the fact that Brazil became a problem because of the fact that one of the major skeptics was Brazilian. So how did you get past that?
Well, we got past it actually by persuading a Secretary of Health to put some people in the field, some very good people, three people in different states, and try to get the different technique or different strategy in place. And it was so dramatically successful. They found enormous numbers of cases, many more than what we were finding on the regular reporting. And I think this alarmed the Brazilian government, and they thought they were really getting an epidemic, and we got a lot more support and more help.
Were you finding similar situations in other parts of the world?
Yes, there were a number of parts of the world where there was less enthusiasm about participating in the program, and an awful lot of them that felt the only thing you'd need to do is vaccinate, and that was it.
I would assume, just from what I know about the world politics, that naming an American to lead this fight would cause some trouble also.
Well, in a way, it did. The Soviet Union had been the primary support of the smallpox eradication, and they joined the U.S. in advocating this be passed in the World Health Assembly. The director general was furious, not believing in this program, and so he blamed the Americans for doing this, promoting this, and so he wanted an American to run the program so that when it failed, the United States would be held accountable and not the World Health Organization. And so with that thoughtful departure into the field of eradication, I began.
In Africa, you face small numbers, but also problems in the chain of command. Why, for example, was an unprepared advisor sent to Botswana, a country that is one of the most successful democracies in all of Africa?
Well, we had problems sometimes, and that was our African regional office, which was very uncooperative. And in fact, many of the things that we had to do, we really had to bypass what was a bureaucracy that was there. And we did use that various techniques to do that, but eventually we managed to solve the problem.
Are we seeing similar problems in Africa with HIV/AIDS today? There was an article in the Times about how men are having themselves circumcised on their own because the South African government has been so lax in dealing with the HIV issue.
The South African government has been a real problem, and they did not want anything done with drugs, for example, for a long time. They're now accepting that. Yeah, there are certain of the governments that have been a problem, but I would say by and large is a more sophisticated group of people now in the African countries and more sophisticated people running programs.
What about in Asia where there are – where the United States had its fair share of conflicts at the time that you were dealing with this, or just was – I guess it was just past the Vietnam War.
It was just past the Vietnam War, but we certainly had no end of problems, that was for sure.
So eventually you overcame them all? All these governments, whether they were totalitarian or democratic, all fell in line?
Well, I think there were a lot of problems in countries that one just can't appreciate. I think India, with at the time 600, 700 million people, and we were just having a terrible time trying to control disease there. And it took some really heroic efforts on the part of the Indian government and ourselves in working out new strategies. And eventually we wound up with a strategy where we arranged to have every village, in fact, every house in India visited in 10 days' time, every 2 months, to try and find outbreaks and quickly stop them.
And it wasn't just strategies. You had a new technology. You had a bifurcated needle. Why is that so important?
Well, the way that we used to vaccinate in Europe and the U.S., what you did was put a drop of vaccine on the skin and then you scratched through it. And this needle is a little fork needle, tiny little thing that was developed by in Wyeth Laboratories. And what you found we could do was dip the needle into vaccine, withdraw it, and then make a number of punctures in the skin, rapid punctures. And we soon found that this was a very effective way to work with the vaccine. We got four times as much vaccine from a single vial. We could teach villagers to do this successfully within 10, 15 minutes.
It didn't hurt?
No, it really didn't. There are very sharp points, and you really are not particularly aware of any pain in this.
The last two countries to have smallpox outbreaks were Ethiopia and Somalia. Why them? I mean, they are troubled, have been troubled countries over the years, but there have been other troubled countries.
Well, I think Ethiopia was the key one there. It's a country twice the size of Texas, huge, not very much in the way of roads. I think it's something like a half the population lives more than 2 days' walk from any accessible road. The emperor was assassinated. I think we had two civil wars that went on. We had floods. We had refugees. Just a huge number of problems, but a really intrepid group of young people who were working with the programs and Ethiopians who were able to overcome this.
And when did you come to the point where you could actually declare that smallpox had been eradicated around the world? Was this something you could actually prove?
This was decided in October 1979, just 30 years ago. An international group which was convened, which were very critical, and we worked with them, and what do they need in the way of further information to be sure that it has there's no smallpox. We'd already spent 2 years in search and surveillance in the different countries, so that we were pretty confident there wasn't anything out there, but we sought their questioning and skepticism, and they did have some doubts. And we had to go on and do some other things with China, for example, as one country, to really prove that it was gone.
My guest is Dr. D.A. Henderson. His book, Smallpox, The Death of a Disease, which features a picture of the bifurcated needle on the front cover, is published by Prometheus Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Late in your book, you write about a threat created by the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, how much were Soviet scientists working with smallpox? They had one of the last examples in their laboratory, and we had one in our country. Were they just keeping it for safekeeping?
Well, really, two parts of the Soviet program. One was the laboratory that was working with us and doing diagnostic work, and there was a separate part, which was largely Department of Defense and where they were working on this smallpox as a biological weapon.
And they thought that they could do the same sort of thing that we did with American Indians?
Well, they had in mind that this would be put as an aerosol, a spray, and that it would be spread over a city, and that there takes really only a very few particles of smallpox to infect, and they could see doing huge damage over a very large population.
And we learned about this because of a man named Kanatyan Alibekov.
Oh, yes. Ken
Alibekov.
Yeah, right. Alibekov is right. Kendrick Alibekov. He's a Russian who'd been the number two man in a major part of this and who defected in late 1992 and brought astounding word that they've had about 600,000 people working in this program in different laboratories and trying to make more vicious versions of the virus.
Wasn't it there a danger that some of it might escape? I don't know how else to say that, but you know, somebody could be exposed, and the next thing you know, you have an outbreak in the area.
Well, the Russians were very, very careful in the production and that they had, and these the workers worked in enclosed manufacturing facilities, and they wouldn't, when they put them on leave after 3 months' stint, they would keep them there for 2 weeks even to make sure that they didn't have any smallpox before they'd release them. So they're very careful not to let it escape.
You were an advisor to several presidents. How concerned was the United States when it learned that the Soviet Union was creating weapon-grade smallpox years after we all assumed the disease had been eliminated?
Well, there was concern in the Clinton administration and in 1995, the concern about terrorism generally. But it took another 3-4 years before the message began to sink in that maybe the biggest threat we have are the biological weapons. And still, this is something that we're having trouble dealing with. There are many people who see nuclear weapons as being far more serious, but I think now we're getting from many different study groups the observation that the biological weapons are ones that could be more devastating, easier to obtain, and easier to distribute.
Didn't Dick Cheney want to reinstate a vaccination program because he was concerned that smallpox might be loosed upon the world by one of our enemies?
Well, we managed to get vaccine produced enough to take care of the United States.
Oh, we have a reserve?
We have a reserve. We have more than 300 million doses. So that, but it's on in deep freeze. It'll be can be kept pretty much forever. And we thought we would use it if we needed it.
Now, why have we only succeeded with smallpox? What about other major killers? I can think of, well, polio is making a resurgence, tuberculosis. Malaria is always there as a serious problem, dengue fever. Couldn't they be eradicated as well?
I don't think eradication is likely. It's very unlikely because for a variety of reasons. Some of these have animal reservoirs. You can't eradicate them. Some of them, you don't have the tools really to do the job. So it's very unlikely, I think, that we're going to eradicate another disease. But we certainly can do a lot with vaccination and preventive measures.
Now, what would happen if smallpox were used as a weapon? Would we be okay? Could the reserves be brought out fast enough? We've seen debacles with simple things like swine flu.
Well, with the smallpox, we have in reserve enough to vaccinate everybody in the country. We're ready working with the state and local communities to be able to put the vaccine out quickly. But in fact, if it were released in one place, we would focus our area, our efforts right there. And I think we could do a pretty good job of walling it off before it spread widely.
Because we have no idea whether there is smallpox elsewhere. We know after the fall of the Soviet Union, there was some scientists who were willing to sell Soviet nuclear secrets. And, of course, Pakistan has spread all sorts of nuclear secrets around the world. I would assume somebody could have just left one of those laboratories with a little bit of smallpox virus.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that's really what we've been concerned about and still are. Because after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the 50-odd laboratories that they had lost a lot of their personnel. And these people were really desperate. And many of them left the Soviet Union. And with that, they carried at least the knowledge, if not the organisms, to other places. So far as we know, no other country has it. But you could do everything you need to do in the size of a two-car garage to produce enough of the organisms to use it as a weapon.
And it's a lot more dangerous than anthrax.
Yes.
Because it's much more easily spread.
It's easily spread. It's very stable. But it spreads from person to person. Anthrax does not spread from person to person. So this is what makes it especially very worrisome.
But as you say, we have enough vaccine, so we should not be worried? Or should we be worried?
I think we have to be alert, but I think we're less worried now. I can tell you after 9/11, we were desperately concerned. We had 90,000 doses ready to be distributed, and that's all we had. Mm-hmm. And now we do have 300 million doses. Yes, we could stop it quite well, But still, after the first wave, I mean, the material's released, you're certainly going to have a lot of cases. But soon after that, we're ready to move quickly, and I think we could stop it very quickly.
Dr. D.A. Henderson is currently professor of medicine and public health at the University of Pittsburgh and a distinguished scholar at the Center for Biosecurity in Baltimore. He is a professor and former dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, and he has served as life sciences advisor to President George Herbert Walker Bush, was the first director of the newly created Office of Public Health Emergency Preparedness in the Department of Health and Human Services. His book, Smallpox, The Death of a Disease, The Inside Story of Eradicating a Worldwide Killer, is published by Prometheus Books. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.